smile and continues to look around for an empty table. His eyes come back to mine, and I make a motion toward the empty chair opposite of me. I don't miss the subtle grimace, and for a moment, I think he may just walk back out the door. But then he looks resigned to sit with me and heads my way. Wolf pulls out the chair, throws his hat on the chair next to it, and gives a beautiful smile to Kelly.
Hey, sugar. Can I have some coffee and a buckwheat stack?
Ugh, he called her sugar. And it sounded all sexy, too. Kelly beams at him and gives him a flirty wink. Anything for you, darling. I clear my throat. Can I get some hot sauce? But she's already spinning away from me. I watch her retreating back for a moment, and then sigh as I turn to face Wolf.
Sugar? I ask him blandly. Isn't she a little young for you?
Wolf throws his head back and laughs. And seriously, were his teeth always that white and straight? I know his lips were always that full, and that must be why I never noticed his teeth. Shaking my head, I pick up my fork and scoop up a tiny piece of scrambled egg. I shouldn't have indulged in that whiskey with Wolf last night, which tipped me over the edge from buzzed to drunk. My stomach's been swimming a bit this morning. As I put the food tentatively in my mouth, he says,
"Got a hangover?"
I don't fail to notice he didn't address my last question, but seriously, not any of my business. Nope. Doesn't bother me at all who Wolf is interested in. I learned my lesson a long time ago. It's never going to be me, so why wish for it? I'm feeling a little poorly, I admit with a smile, and then try a bite of bacon. Wolf seems to think that's good enough opportunity for him to get all brotherly on me. He leans in and murmurs softly, but with chastisement.
Seriously, Callie, what were you thinking last night? Getting up on that bar, flashing your shit for everyone to see?
My cheeks start to burn, not only from embarrassment, but also from anger. Who are you to judge me? I grit out. Wolf pushes back and shoots me a surprised look.
Hey, I'm not judging. It's just, that's not you. It's not the girl I know.
I'm a woman, I point out as I turn my attention back to my food.
That you are,
he mutters, but I don't look back at him, keeping my gaze on my plate. I eat in silence and don't even bother to look up when Kelly brings Wolf his coffee. They chat for a bit. He asks her if she'll be coming by the Wicked Horse anytime soon, and she giggles and simpers for a bit, assuring him she'll be by. Wolf turns on the charm and flirts right back with her, and she giggles some more, makes me even more nauseous. After Kelly totters off, I just can't seem to help myself. So, you and Kelly, huh? Wolf gives me a knowing grin. The type that knows I might be a little jealous, and he finds it amusing. He places his forearms on the table and kicks his legs out, brushing them against mine under the table.
Come on, Callie. That was just a little bit of harmless flirting.
That sounds sincere, and my shoulders sag a bit, telling myself with brutal honesty that I had been a little on edge over the thought of Wolf with another woman, which was just utter ridiculousness. He doesn't think of me like that. He was painfully clear about that after Richard died. And then he knocks away any remaining doubt about that issue.
Besides,
he says as an afterthought, as he picks up his coffee cup and looks me square in the eye,
I don't go out with brunettes.
Kelly is a brunette. But then, so am I. My mouth drops open slightly at the blatant and backhanded slap at me. I mean, I don't know if that was directed at me intentionally, but it hit me squarely. And my shoulders sag just a bit more as I realize that maybe I am still harboring some feelings for Wolf. Oh, who the fuck am I kidding? I've been carrying a torch for this man for as long as I can remember. I think even when he put frogs in my bed at the age of 9, that I loved him then. I know for sure that when he kissed me the night after Richard's funeral, and then gave me my very first orgasm, I loved him. Yes, it was definitely love, Or otherwise, why would I have been so shattered when he wouldn't have sex with me? I can remember that night with painful and vivid detail. I'll never forget what I believe was actual disgust on his face when I told him I was a virgin. That night, he not only gave me my first orgasm, he gave me my first broken heart. In fact, it's been my only broken heart. I nursed it for 2 years and finally started to let some of it go when I met Will in college at Duke. I gave my virginity to Will instead. I also gave him my love and promised to marry him. I tried to push Wolf Jennings to the back of my dark closet and leave him there. I not only tried, but I succeeded. Because he rarely crossed my mind as I lived out my days as the model bride-to-be beside William F. Tynick, Esquire. He stayed buried away, popping out on occasion if we ran into each other during holidays, but for the most part, Wolf was nothing more than a family friend. Something he's just made abundantly clear again. A change in subject is in order. So, what's the real story about the Wicked Horse? I ask genially before attacking my home fries. The grease actually seems to be settling my stomach. A brief flicker of anxiety passes over Wolf's face, and he asks me cautiously,
"What do you mean, the real story?"
"I mean," I say dryly as I wave my fork at him, "why is Wolf Jennings, CEO of Genco, spending his time running a bar? Or, for that matter, how in the hell do you even have time to do that?" Wolf seems to relax.
"I have a business partner, Bridger Payne. He does most of the work there. I'm more like a silent partner."
"But why?" I press him. Not that I can't see Wolf doing that, because I can so see him hanging out in just such a place. It seems to fit him.
"It's a nice break from an otherwise dull life," he says softly.
I swallow my food, setting my fork down. "Dull life?"
"Come on, Callie," he says with joking censure. "Can you honestly say you'd ever see me sitting behind a desk my entire life?"
I blink at him in surprise. Not at what he just said, but at myself. Because, yeah, I know Wolf. He wouldn't be happy behind a desk. He's too rugged and adventurous. Always has been. He's more at home in the leather of a saddle than a chair. He loves the outdoors too much. He likes thrills and excitement. "I can't see you sitting behind a desk," I agree quietly. He stares at me silently, almost with relief in his eyes that I... what? Still know him? Is he relieved that I still know my longtime friend? My brother's close friend? My failed lover? I smile at him in understanding before pushing my plate away. "Okay, so I get the Wicked Horse," which is a great name, by the way. "How long have you had it?"
"It's only been open a few months," he says with pride. "It keeps me sane and makes dealing in a world of suits otherwise bearable."
"Well, I certainly had fun there last night," I say with a grin.
"Too much fun,"
he says as his eyes flick briefly down to my chest. My face turns hot just knowing that he's thinking, in this very moment, about my naked breasts. "Not enough fun," I assert with challenge. "Someone stopped me."
"I did you a favor, Callie. You're lucky a picture didn't end up in today's paper."
Shrugging my shoulders, I take another sip of coffee. "Well, that didn't happen. So let's move on." Carmen is the one that ends up bringing Wolf his breakfast, thank God, as I don't think I could take any more of Kelly's flirting. After he pours some syrup on his stack, he starts cutting into it.
"Speaking of moving on, what are your plans?"
I told Wolf last night all the painful details of what happened with Will. He's the only other person other than me, Will, and Judge Lane that know the sordid mess. "I'm not sure. My dad will be gearing up for re-election next year. Maybe I'll stick around and work on his campaign.
It makes sense,
he says after spearing a few chunks of pancake on his fork.
You of the two poli-sci degrees.
I duck my head to hide my pleased smile, that he remembers what my degrees are in. After graduating from Duke with my political science bachelor's degree, I went on and completed their master's program while Will went to law school at Duke. My dream had been to go to D.C. and work in the Senate or House as an aide, or maybe even try my hand at lobbying, but Will wanted to move back home to Connecticut and go into private practice, and so I lamely followed him. And you know what the value of poli-sci degrees are in suburbia? About $0. Therefore, I worked 35 hours a week as an event planner in a business owned by the wife of one of Will's partners. Wolf's phone rings and he shoots me an apologetic look just before he answers it.
Jennings.
I watch as he pushes his plate away and leans forward, one forearm on the table, the other raised to press the phone to his ear. His eyes roam around the restaurant lazily, not really seeing anything because I can tell he's carefully listening to whoever is on the other end. Finally, he says,
Yeah, that was supposed to have been mailed out to you a week before last. I just assumed you received it.
He listens a bit more, then looks over at me and makes a writing motion with his hand. I immediately dip into my purse, pull out a pen, and push a napkin across the table at him. He scrawls something that's practically illegible and says,
Okay, got it. I'll mail it myself as soon as I get back to the Double J.
When Wolf disconnects, he looks flustered as he takes the napkin and tucks it into his shirt pocket.
Sorry about that. I just need to send myself a quick email so I don't forget about something when I get back to my office.
No problem, I say as I watch him over my coffee cup. I wait for him to send the email, and when he looks back up at me, I tilt my head to the side and ask, Don't you have a secretary or something to handle that stuff? Wolf snorts as he lays his phone back down and picks his fork back up.
I have a secretary who works at the main office of Jen Cohen Cheyenne, but I can't seem to find a local one to keep me straight. I think I've been through 5 different ones already this year.
Slave driver, I tease.
No, seriously. I'm a pretty easygoing boss. I just hire shitty people without a work ethic.
Well, I'm not doing anything. I'll help you out if you want. Wolf freezes with a forkful of buckwheat cakes to his mouth and just stares at me in contemplation. But then he lowers the fork and his eyes right along and says,
No, I don't think that's a good idea.
Why not? I press him. I don't have anything to do, and I'm a fucking whiz at organization. I've kept my father's schedule straight during his campaigns, and shit, Wolf, I was a fucking event planner in Connecticut. I hated it, but I was damn good. I've got skills, at least. He blinks at me hard and doesn't say a word. What? I ask defensively.
Just that filthy mouth you've developed, he says softly. It's very anti-Cali.
I'm not the same girl you once knew, I tell him firmly. Well, I really was, but I aim to change that. So far, I've entered a wet t-shirt contest and mastered the word fuck. I'm quite proud of myself so far. Wolf scrubs his hand thoughtfully over his stubbled chin. Seriously? Did this guy ever shave? It seems he always has just the perfect amount of whiskers to make him look even 10 times sexier than normal.
I'll pay you $20 an hour, 30 hours a week, he says bluntly. Oh, and buy a coffee pot for the office when you come in tomorrow.
And just like that, I had a job. Working for Wolf Jennings. Life is good.
Chapter 5. Wolf. Two things assault me when I open my main office door at the Double J. They happen almost simultaneously, yet one is just a few seconds before the other. the deliciously deep and rich scent of dark roast coffee brewing. Next, Colton Stokes sitting on the edge of Callie's desk, one long leg planted firmly on the floor, the other resting perilously close to her arm. He's gazing down at her in what I know is barely disguised lust, and they're both laughing at something. I shut the door hard, and Callie jumps in her seat, turning her head my way. She gives me a cheeky grin and says, "Geez, Wolf, you just about gave me a heart attack." I don't smile back at her, and I'm an utter dick when I say, "Not surprised. What with your attentions focused elsewhere?" I say this with a great deal of employer censure, and her face flushes.
"Sorry. Colton was just telling me a joke. He's here for your 10 a.m. meeting."
Nodding curtly at her, I walk over to the coffee pot and pour myself a cup. I silently will myself to get under control, but fuck. That just started my morning off shitty watching them laugh together. Colton wants in her pants, no doubt about that. Not sure what Callie wants, but I seem to remember they dated in high school. I know he doesn't know her as carnally as I do, but doesn't mean that he won't in the future. I risk a quick glance over at them. Colton has stood from her desk and stepped a few feet away. But Callie? Man, fucking more gorgeous today than she was yesterday. When she showed up for her first day of work just 3 days ago, she was wearing a pair of jeans, cowboy boots, and a white t-shirt that fit her nicely. She had on a heavy denim jacket, as the mornings were still quite chilly, and her hair was in a ponytail.
"Sorry about the attire," she had said without real apology. "I don't have much in the way of clothing here. I plan to try to get some shopping done this afternoon when I get off."
I assured her that working on a cattle ranch, regardless of whether it was in the saddle or behind a desk, meant jeans were entirely appropriate. And yet, the very next day, she showed up in a slim black skirt that came to just above her knees and a silver-colored blouse that dipped low but didn't reveal anything but shadow. The kicker was a pair of knee-high boots with heels that added a good 4 inches onto her height, and because she's tall, almost put her eye to eye with me. Her hair was stylishly sleek. She had on makeup, and her lips were glossy. She looked like a movie star, and I think my tongue was hanging out of my head all day. She dressed to the nines again today in a form-fitting dress in a dark purple color, and those killer sexy boots again. As she sits at her desk, I can see a flush of skin above her knees, and when I glance back over at Colton, he notices that too. Asshole. "Let's go, Stokes," I say brusquely and nod my head toward my office. Colton follows me in, and I shut the door behind us. By the time he takes a seat opposite my desk, I'm already regretting my tone with him. Colton is a long-standing friend. His family ranches cattle, too, and he's a decent guy. On top of that, I really have no business getting between him and Callie, so I try to lighten the mood for all our sakes. "Saw your dad in town the other day. He's looking great," I say genially. Clinton Stokes had quadruple bypass surgery at the young age of just 52 about 6 months ago. Colton has been pretty much running things since then. Colton smiles and nods his head.
"Yeah, he's a tough old coot. Nothing will keep him down for long."
I laugh and drum my fingers on my desk. "Remember that time he caught us reading his dirty magazines in the bathroom when we were kids? Scared the shit out of me when he chased us around, threatening us with his belt." With a bark of a laugh, Colton nods his head.
"I was more afraid he'd tell my mom what we were doing."
We both chuckle over the memory, and I'm satisfied Colton isn't giving any thought to my dick attitude just a few minutes ago. I not only don't want him thinking I have anything going on with Callie, which I do not, but I also do business with the man, and I don't need tensions there. We're headed to auction in a few weeks, but I wanted to ask you about the results of your crossbreeding program. I seg into the real reason I asked Colton to come by. He blinks at me in surprise, because while the Stokes know their cattle, they aren't on the same playing field as the Jennings. But he's not giving himself enough credit, because I've been hearing some good things about his new crossbreed of Red Angus and Hereford cows. Colton gives me a smile and lapses into a long-winded soliloquy of the program. He's only all too happy to share with me as we sell off our excess cattle to his ranch, and we also use their slaughterhouse from time to time, so he desperately wants to maintain good business relations with Double J. He tells me about the methods they use to breed and continues on to proudly talk about the beef falling well within Angus certification guidelines. He drones on, and while the information is interesting and completely useful to our operations, my mind drifts to Callie. She's been a damn godsend in just the few days she's been working for me. She has me entirely organized, and for the first time in, well, forever, I don't feel as if I'm always in a state of worry that I've forgotten to do something important. She's working with Marta, my secretary at Genco, and between the two of them, I feel like the weight has been lifted off my shoulders. The downside to her working for me is her presence. It's maddening. Her scent, her beauty, her voice. 9 times out of 10, when I'm looking at her, she'd be surprised to know I'm imagining something filthy I want to do to her. Just yesterday, I imagined eating her out while she was splayed out naked on my desk, and only my phone ringing brought me out of that daydream, which was, by far, one of the tamest. Callie would never speak to me again if she ever found out what my dirtiest fantasy with her was. Hell, I feel compelled to slap myself on her behalf just for thinking it. Give it up, dude. Not ever going to happen. I force myself to listen to Colton and even write down some notes as he talks. After about half an hour, we make arrangements for me to come over and check out his stock. When we're finished, I walk with him to my door, but before we get there, he says, "You missed a crazy time at the opening of Bacchanalia the other night." Colton is grinning at me slyly. And yes, Colton is a member of the Wicked Horse's inner club. He pays a whopping $50,000 for a platinum membership, which pretty much gives him access to everything. 24/7 access to all the buildings, unlimited food and liquor, and registration in our fantasy database that helps to facilitate hookups by matching people according to their level of kink and desires. Bridger and I have had to carefully construct our sex club so we don't run afoul of prostitution laws. I employed a team of lawyers to make sure we were legally in compliance of all criminal statutes, and I vet my employees very carefully to make sure they stay in compliance too. The law is really quite simple, though, and easy enough to skirt around. Prostitution in Wyoming is when a person performs, permits, offers, or agrees to sex in return for money or property. Therefore, we had to make sure the exchange of monies to my company was not in exchange for sex. Rather, it's more of a rental fee on the facilities to make use of however they want. For his $50,000, Colton gets a membership into a private club that offers him a place to socialize with excellent food and liquor, as well as entertainment. If Colton happens to participate in sex when he shows up, that's all his choice. He exchanges no money with his partner or partners, nor does said partner or partners get paid. All people engaging in sex are there because of paid memberships that do nothing more than guarantee them entry into the building, top shelf liquor, and gourmet food.
That includes the few employees from the main club that partake of what the club has to offer. So as not to confuse the payment of money for their bartending or waitressing services as part of their salary, each of those employees also gets a silver membership to the sex club. It only gives them access 2 days a week, but otherwise operates the same as a platinum membership. So, technically, the employees are not paid for their work in the silo or one of the cabins, but rather enjoy a much higher salary than most bartenders or waitresses would make, as well as a silver membership. The one thing that has caused some troubles for Bridger and me is if a club member is extremely satisfied with the services one of my employees provides and wants to give a tip. We have to shut that shit down fast, because that right there is prostitution. No employee of mine can accept monies once they step foot out of the main club, and I will fire them on the spot if I catch it. I give a knowing smile to Colton and lower my voice so I ensure Callie can't hear us through the door. I'm purposely vague when I say, "I was there when the party kicked off, but I didn't stay long. Must have missed you." That's true enough, and if Colton chooses to believe I participated, so be it. But the fact of the matter is, I just showed up and gave a little speech about how excited Bridger and I were. I only stayed for about a total of 10 minutes, watching Bridger play with a husband and wife who've been members since we opened. Normally, observing Bridger put both a man and a woman on their knees before him and making them take turns sucking his dick would turn me the fuck on. But not that night. For some reason, I just wasn't into it. I felt unsettled and unsure of myself for the first time I can ever remember. I ended up going home and watching a basketball game on TV while I drank a beer. I even wondered what it would be like if Callie were there with me. Maybe curled up into my side, reading a book. Shaking my head because I have no fucking business thinking those things, I grab the doorknob and open the door. I hold my hand out, and Colton shakes it. "Thanks for coming by, man. I'll be out to see you next week as planned." "Sure thing, Wolf." Turning my back on him, I force myself not to look at Callie sitting at her desk and walk back to my own. I flip up my calendar to look at my schedule for the rest of the day, pleased to see that after my lunch meeting, I don't have anything else. I think I'll knock off and head over to the Wicked Horse. Stephanie is on duty, I think, and I could get a quick fuck in. I think that all I need is to just get laid. It's been going on a full week now since I've had some pussy, and I'm starting to get grumpy about it. Yeah, that's what I'll do. My mouth curves into a smile, and I give myself a little fist pump of exuberance. I just need to get reoriented. Shake off all the crazy that came with the return of Callie Hayes. "This little restaurant they just opened up on the main square," I hear Colton saying, and my ears perk up hard.
"Sounds divine," Callie says.
"Awesome. Saturday, then. I'll pick you up at 7? Colton says with excitement in his voice. "Oh, hell fucking no." I shoot out of my chair and walk out of the office just as Callie says,
"It's a date."
"What's a date?" I ask casually as I open up the file cabinet behind her desk, rooting around for what the fuck ever.
"I'm going to take Callie out to that new restaurant in town on Saturday," Colton says with a shit-eating grin.
I turn from the cabinet with a folder in my hand, no clue what I just grabbed, and give first Colton and then Callie an apologetic look.
"Sorry. She has to work this weekend."
"Doing what?" Callie demands as Colton's face falls. "It's branding weekend on the Double J," I say smoothly, immensely grateful that it is, in fact, the weekend we'll be vaccinating, castrating, and branding the spring calves. "It's going to be a busy day for me, and I'll need your help. Colton looks at me dubiously, because as an owner of a cattle ranch, he knows I really don't have much to do. I mean, sure, I'll participate in some of the branding, but that's just for fun. In fact, most ranches treat Branding Day as a festival of sorts. All the ranch hands and their families will be there. After all the work is done, we'll have events like roping contests and three-legged races for the kids. I've got 200 pounds of Double J barbecue being cooked with enough potato salad, baked beans, and apple pie to feed an army. Hell, I've even got a band to play and fireworks set up. Not a damn thing for me to do other than enjoy it. And while I had been struggling this week on whether or not to invite Callie, that decision just got firmly made, all so I could prevent her from going out with Colton. I'm such an asshole. And yet I can't find it within me to feel guilty about it. I don't want her. Not in the way I'm sure she wants to be wanted. But I don't want anyone else to have her. It's twisted and complex, and I should back the fuck off. But I'm not. Plan on being at the Double J about mid-morning. Okay, Callie? I say as I look at her. I want to gauge how she feels about me breaking up her date with Colton. She gives me a brilliant smile, and I relax. Callie's always loved this type of stuff. She's going to have a blast, and that makes me feel good. She then turns that brilliant smile to Colton and says, I'm sorry. Maybe we could go next weekend. And now Colton is smiling brilliantly at Callie. It's all shining white teeth flashing around the room, and it makes me pissy. I frantically search my brain for something I need her to do next weekend, but I come up empty. No matter. I'll figure something out by then. Catch you later, Colton, I say in dismissal, and then head back into my office. Colton apparently gets the hint because I hear the front door open and close seconds later. Thoughts of fucking Stephanie gone, I shut my door and walk over to the shelf where the architectural drawings for the Wicked Horse are still laying. I pull them out from time to time, survey the surrounding land, and figure out how we can grow bigger. But now I look at them with a bit of dread in my stomach. Week after next, Ten will be coming to visit, and I'm going to have to show him these plans. It's time he learned his little brother also has plans that exist outside of the family business. It's important I show him this because I've been thinking a lot lately about seeing if there's a way for me to distance myself from Genco. We had considered once taking the company public, but our overwhelming sense of familial obligation shot that idea down. Almost 2 years later, though, and I'm feeling the walls closing in on me. The Wicked Horse will be a shock to Ten. It's going to cause some waves. Big, choppy waves. But I have to at least start the communication about it and see where he stands.
Chapter 6. Callie. For a man that insisted I be here at the Double J mid-morning to help him, Wolf sure seems to be relaxing a lot. I look over at him sitting at one of the picnic tables set up on the east lawn beside the main house, lazily drinking a beer with his business partner, Bridger Payne. Wolf introduced me to him not long ago, and he's an interesting man. He's big. I mean, bigger than Wolf, and Wolf is like a giant. Huge muscled arms and a massive chest. It's clear he works out, seriously. He's a little intimidating because there's something in his eyes that doesn't quite set right with me. Not in a dishonest type of way, but it's more like he knows something about you that maybe even you don't know yourself. Bridger also looks like the type of man who gets whatever he wants. And if it's a challenge to get it, he's going to knock you on your ass while he plows all over you for the win. What interests me most about Bridger is actually my reaction to seeing him with Wolf. It's clear that they are more than just business partners. You can tell they're friends, very close friends. It's the natural way in which they talk with each other. It's in the way in which they laugh together. Hell, I can even see it when they just sit there in silence with each other as they watch all the happenings going on around them. I thought their friendship might make me a little bitter, seeing as how my brother used to be Wolf's closest friend. But I found myself actually filled with a peaceful happiness for Wolf, that he found someone in whom he could trust and bond like he had with Richard. I busy myself at one of the many long tables covered with red checkered cloths and laden with food, starting to place some tinfoil over the bowls of side dishes as the first wave of people have gone through. While Wolf is having this party catered, I feel compelled to do actual work since he's paying me. But so far, he's not given me much to do, so I'm trying to act busy. I sneak another peek over at the picnic table, and both Wolf and Bridger are looking at me, their heads inclined toward each other. It's clear they're talking about me, and a warm flush creeps up my neck. Never taking his eyes off me, Bridger murmurs something to Wolf, and the look in Wolf's eyes becomes focused with intensity. His eyes seem to be glittering across the way at me. His jaw sets in a hard line. He even bites down roughly into his lower lip while Bridger continues to talk quietly to him, all the while they're both staring at me. I hastily avert my gaze, not able to handle the way Wolf is eating me up. And what in the hell could Bridger have said to make him look at me like that? It's like he was encouraging him, saying something to incite Wolf. I grab some napkins and start wiping up spills around the serving bowls, my pulse skipping madly for some reason. The band Wolf hired starts tuning their instruments, causing my gaze to slide over there. I can see down past them to the branding paddock. The ranch hands are working on a few more calves, but everything is done for the day. Everyone has plates of food and beers in their hands. People are laughing in celebration for a good, hard day's work and a traditionally important rite of passage for the animals. I can remember coming to the Double J brandings all the time growing up. I'd watch Wolf, Ten, and Richard help wrestle the calves to the ground, and I wanted to help, but my mother wouldn't let me. It didn't befit a young lady. Or so she said. The party afterward was always so much fun, chasing fireflies when the sun set, listening to music and eating homemade ice cream until I was sick. Not much has changed, although I didn't intend to overindulge on the ice cream, but I do intend to enjoy the fireworks that will start up probably within the next hour. I sneak one more peek over at the picnic tables, curious if Wolf and Bridger are still watching me. I'm not sure what it says about me that I'm actually disappointed they're both gone. I scan my eyes around, but I don't see either of them. Sighing, I decide to go ahead and get a plate of food and a beer. My entire day of non-working has actually been quite tiring, and I'd like to get off my feet for a bit. Some barbecue, a little piece of pie, a little fireworks, then I'm heading home for a nice hot bath, and maybe a good book. As the fireworks start, I loop my purse over my shoulder and make my way toward the makeshift parking area. I drove my father's truck, because even though he's the governor, everyone in Wyoming has a truck, and it just felt good to drive it. It made me feel like I was truly back home. And fuck the little BMW convertible Will bought me to drive around back in Connecticut. Those days were over. I want to make a quick getaway as soon as the show is over, but I can't resist watching the sparkling lights. So I pull the tailgate down on my truck and hop my ass onto it. Just as I shrug the strap of my purse off my arm, the first rocket goes off. I hear the boom first, and then the rocket splits apart into a million fragmented blue and white crystals against the night sky. I can't help the exhale of pleasure that escapes over the sight.
"What are you doing hiding back here?"
Wolf says as he hops onto the tailgate beside me. Startled, I jump slightly and cast a quick glance at him, but then pin my eyes back to the sky. I don't want to miss a thing. "I'm going to head out as soon as the fireworks are over, so I figured I'd just sit out here. I tell him as 3 more rockets go off. Boom. 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 3 huge flowering displays pulsing outward. Man, these are spectacular. And I know Wolf must have paid a fortune for this. We sit in silence for a bit, watching the show, and I can't help but smile as I hear little kids oohing and awing over the fireworks. I turn to look at Wolf, just briefly, to see if he's enjoying this as much as I am, but when I turn to face him, I find his gaze is settled on me and not the sky. I tilt my head at him with a curious smile. What? He smirks at me, reaches out and grabs at the end of one of the pigtail braids I have just barely hanging over each shoulder. Giving it a tug, he says,
Wyoming suits you, Callie.
I hold his gaze for just a moment, and then turn my face upward again, causing him to let go of my hair. I'm really glad to be home. Wolf bumps his shoulder against mine, vying against the fireworks for my attention.
Are you here to stay?
I shrug my shoulders. Maybe. I need to figure out who Callie Hayes is first.
You know who she is,
he tells me in gentle admonishment. I leave the glow of sparkles behind and turn to look at him again. You're actually right, Wolf. I do know who she is. What I should have said is that I don't like who Callie Hayes is, what she's become. I need to figure out who I want to be, and I need to make those changes. I start to incline my face back upward, but I'm stopped by Wolf's hand grasping my jaw. He holds me in place, so I have to look at him.
You don't need to change a damn thing about yourself.
His voice is soft and soothing, almost as if he's talking to a child. It pisses me off, and I jerk my face away from him. My words are calm, but tinged in ice. You have no idea what I do or don't need. You try living in someone's shadow for years, completely bending and twisting your life to fit his. You try giving up all your dreams to let someone else get theirs. You try to be what everyone expects, even though it tears you up inside. You do all that, Wolf, and tell me you don't become someone you don't like. My voice cracks, falters. Wolf narrows his eyes at me.
I'm so pathetically dull, I say with a quiet but sure voice, that my fiancé can only get his rocks off by having another woman gag and whip him. Try being that person and tell me you don't want to change.
I expect another admonishment from Wolf. Maybe a snort of disbelief, a look of pity. Instead, his hands shoot out and take my face, jerking me toward him. He meets me halfway, putting his lips against mine and giving me a blistering kiss. Tilting his head, he pushes my mouth open with his own, and then his tongue becomes a part of me. His fingers grasp me tightly as he kisses me deeply. My head swims in confusion and lust. My hands come up to grasp his wrists to hold him to me, afraid he might pull away. And he does, but only slightly, only enough to look at me with a simmering anger. At me?
If I ever hear you call yourself pathetically dull again, I'm going to tan your hide,
he says, and then he kisses me again. And holy hell, Wolf Jennings is sitting in the back of my truck with me, kissing me. With such force that in this moment, I would do whatever he asked of me. I'd give him my soul. Most definitely my body. Wolf kisses me with all the surety of a man who knows what he wants. He nips at my lower lip, swipes hard at my tongue, and growls into my mouth. His kiss alone moves me so greatly that I can't help the deep moan I give as my hands snake around his neck. His own hands drop to my waist, and with an effortless move, he hauls me across the tailgate right onto his lap. No, correction. After maneuvering my legs, he makes me straddle his lap. This is made easy by the fact that first, I have no hesitation in accepting this new position, and second, that I wore a flower-patterned dress and my cowboy boots to this shindig. The boots clunk down on the truck bed and my skirt rises to mid-thigh, but I don't care. I only care that Wolf wants to not only kiss me, but kiss me while I'm straddling him. And then, oh my fucking God, his hands go to my thighs and he pushes me down onto his lap, grinding me onto what is an erection so large I can't even fathom the possibility of it. My breath comes skittering out of my mouth, and I have no control over my body. My hips undulate, causing the most amazing friction between us. The fireworks continue to go off with loud booms, followed by hisses and sizzles that periodically light up Wolf's face. Sadly, I realize that once the fireworks end, so too shall this kiss. I hope it's a really long show. Wolf's hands slide up my thighs, pushing my skirt right along with it. The night air is getting chilly, and I can feel goosebumps breaking out in the wake of his touch. I continue to rub myself on Wolf while his kiss seems to take on an urgent quality. His breathing is harsh, and I can feel tension vibrating off him in waves. And then, I almost combust just as loud and bright as the fireworks above us, as Wolf fingers the edge of my panties just a brief moment before slipping under. I break the kiss because my head falls backward, seemingly unable to support itself. Oh, God, I moan as his finger brushes against me, causing a shudder to rip through my entire body. Someone might see us. His response? He pushes a finger inside of me, and my head snaps up so I can look at him. His eyes burn into me while he pumps his finger in and out. I know what he's thinking. He's thinking about the last time he did this to me. I can see recrimination in his eyes that here we are, once again. If I were a smarter woman, I'd scramble off his lap and run for the hills. While this feels amazing and, oh, so right, I know I'm probably on a one-way street to abandonment when he's finished with me. But I think I might rather be selfish instead. So I give a roll of my hips against his hand, and a harsh breath hisses out of Wolf. Fuck yeah, he murmurs as one finger becomes two inside of me. I put my hands on his shoulders and use leverage to push myself up and down, counter to his own thrusting. I'm stunned to my core when Wolf takes the edge of my dress with his other hand and bunches it up, pulling it to the side. He looks down at what is now an unfettered view of his fingers inside my panties, inside of me. Watch it, Callie, he commands in a hoarse voice as he bows his head down. Look at you, riding my fingers. I don't want to look. I'm afraid it might be too much. I'd rather look at the top of Wolf's head, or maybe even sift my fingers through his hair. I rock my hips against him, moving faster and faster. My pulse is hammering madly. But then I decide to look. Letting my gaze slide down, I see Wolf's fingers disappearing and reappearing with shiny slickness. I see the thick ridge of his erection pushing against denim just below. And I watch in utter fascination as he skims his thumb right over my clit and presses down on me hard. I scream as my orgasm tears through me, but it's cut off quickly as Wolf releases my dress and grabs me by the back of my head, pulling my face to his. His mouth covers mine, and he sucks down every bit of vocal gratification that comes rushing out of me. My hips buck in a frenzy against his hand, trying to draw out every single bit of pleasure that I can, even as I vaguely realize the fireworks finale is going on right now with resounding booms and the sky lights up like it never has before. I finally still my movements, feeling utter exhaustion start to come over me. Wolf pulls his mouth from me as he removes his hand from my panties. He smooths my dress down, but makes no move to push me off. Instead, he takes one finger and just skims it down my throat. It's wet, and my skin tingles from the touch. Wolf raises his eyes to mine, and he quietly reiterates to me the point of his lesson.
Don't ever call yourself pathetically dull again, because that was single-handedly the sexiest, most exciting thing I've ever seen in my life.
I swallow hard, and because I know he expects me to obey his words, I give him a nod of acceptance.
That's my girl,
he says. Then he kisses my forehead and lifts me off his lap. When I'm once again seated on my tailgate, Wolf hops off and disappears into the darkness.
Chapter 7. Wolf. It's Monday morning, and I'm late getting into the office. Callie's car is already parked out in front of the Double J office, but I expected it would be. She's never less than punctual. Unlike me this morning. That's called procrastination on my part, but I can't put it off any longer. I have to get the confrontation with Callie out of the way so I can get back on track with my life. My gut churns, wondering what will be in her eyes when I walk in that door. Will there be anger over what I did to her? Rejection I didn't stay? Or even worse, hope in her eyes there will be something more. Fuck. What in the hell had I been thinking? Finger-fucking sweet Callie Hayes out in the open, where anyone could have seen? Just the thought of it makes my dick twitch, and I mentally sneer at it to stay the fuck down and away from her. And I would have left her alone, too, had it not been for Bridger and his fucking taunts. I made the mistake of admitting to my best friend in the world, who I now could cheerfully kill, that I invited Callie to the branding party to prevent her from going out with Colton. Asshole thought that was hilarious and needled me all day about it. When he sat down at the picnic table with me that evening as dusk was settling, he did what Bridger is best at doing. He incited lust. Pure, white-hot lust within me for Callie. Just a few simple words. Filthy, really. You know what? He taunted me with a deep, silky voice as we both watched Callie fiddling around at the serving table. I know you think that girl is too sweet for the likes of you, but I'm telling you, Wolf, look at her spine. It's all in the backbone, the way she holds herself. That girl is built for some raw and dirty fucking. She wants it, too. No, wait. It's more than that. She needs it. Yeah, that girl needs it, Wolf. Those words right there started my brain obsessing about Callie. Bridger was definitely trying to get a rise out of me, but I couldn't dismiss what he was saying. Bridger is a man who can take one look at a man or a woman and tell you what makes them tick sexually. He knows how to draw out a person's desires. He knows how to break and rebuild. I don't doubt for a second if he says Callie needs something, she really needs it. But Christ, why did I have to be the one to give it to her? I've asked myself that over and over again since Saturday night. I chastised myself only to turn around and pat myself on the back. I cursed my weakness and high-fived my spontaneity. I looked in the mirror and told myself I was nothing but danger to Callie, and then smiled at my reflection and told myself I deserved to have her. I wasn't lying to her. Callie Hayes riding my fingers, her face flushed, biting at her lower lip, and then exploding all over me was the sexiest thing I've ever seen. I didn't get an orgasm out of the deal, and yet, it may have been the best sexual experience of my life. I know I certainly had no desire to head over to the silo afterward. Sort of like the way I've had no desire for anyone else since Callie rolled back into town. How is that humanly possible? I have fucked so many beautiful women, done so many filthy things, always pushing the envelope of my sexuality. I've done and seen it all. My sex life is that of a god's. And yet, just watching that woman have an orgasm was almost otherworldly to me. I think there's a chance I could be permanently and irrevocably fucked in the head. Just before opening the door, I take a deep breath. Just act cool and casual. Just another day at the office. I open the door and brace myself, expecting the worst. But Callie isn't at her desk. I sigh with relief and step inside, shutting the door behind me. I figure she's in the bathroom, so I hastily pour a cup of coffee and head into my office where I can shut the door and hide. As soon as I enter, I can feel a vibration in the air that tells me something is wrong. There Callie stands, hands planted on my desk, head bent down, looking at the Wicked Horse architectural plans. More importantly, at the one for the silo, which I had left lying there on top when I left on Friday, never once thinking about Callie possibly seeing it. Stupid, stupid, stupid. She doesn't even look up at me, although she knows I'm standing there. I can't even begin to imagine what she's seeing. Those plans have morphed over the months since they were first drawn up and have changed from just technical specs to almost a roadmap of our journey into the business of sex. She'll see how we named the silo rooms. BDSM, fetish, gangbang, menage, orgy. She'll see handwritten notes by Bridger listing out the tools that he bought. Cuffs, whips, ball gags, clamps, floggers, canes. This list is endlessly damning. I hold still as a statue as I watch her stare at the plans before her. Her eyes roam all over, once she even takes a finger and taps it against the center. Finally, she looks up at me, and I get ready for a full-body cringe over the condemnation I'll see on her face. Except, it's not there. In fact, her face looks passively bland. It makes me relax just marginally. "The silo," she says softly, slowly, carefully choosing her words. "Behind the nightclub. It's a sex club?" I swallow hard and give a tentative nod, afraid to trust my voice. Her gaze lowers to the plans again, and she slides a finger to the top corner, stopping over the words, "The Wicked Horse." "This is your brand?" she asks hesitantly as she taps her finger on the image just below the words. A circle, an inner ring, 7 compartments. So obvious. "Yes," I say softly.
"It's modeled after the silo."
"Yes."
"Because that's sort of the cornerstone of your
sex club," I provide politely. She nods with flushed cheeks, but forges ahead since I'm answering her questions.
"And what? Do people pay to go in there and have sex with other people?"
Her voice is timidly curious, but I note a slight tone of censure. Sighing, I take my hat off and toss it on the wall peg. Since she's standing behind my desk where my chair is, I take one of the guest chairs and sit down, kicking my legs out. This is not how I imagined my run-in with Callie would unfurl. Bridger and I wanted to open a club where people could live out their deepest fantasies without fear of judgment or condemnation. We wanted a private club where people could be themselves, so to speak, to explore their sexuality in a safe environment. I stop right there. Let her digest what I've said. It's the simple truth of what she's seen,
It's not the full truth, but the simple truth, and really all she needs to know.
And you practice, like BDSM or something?
She asks fearfully, her eyes holding what I think may be a bit of disgust in them. Of course there would be disgust. I mean, after the way she found her fiancé and that judge.
I don't practice it, I tell her swiftly. I mean, some elements, yes, but I'm not hardcore. I don't hand out pain. If I expected her to look relieved over those words, I would have been a fool. She looks overwhelmed with what she's learned so far.
So, what do you do there? You, specifically, I mean.
She asks, her voice so slight and whisper soft, I can barely hear her. It irritates me. The delicacy by which she's discussing this. I'm pissed I have to sugarcoat things for a sweet girl. I'm pissed she was in my office, even though I've never forbidden her from being in here, and I'm pissed she knows this about me. What do you think I do, Callie? I taunt her in a low growl. I sit forward in my chair, press my elbows to my knees, and stare at her with naked honesty. Same as anyone else. I fuck. Callie's lips are drawn downward, her eyes bleak. It hurts to see her look at me like that, and for the first time in my adult life, I'm ashamed of my proclivities. For a fleeting instant, I feel the urge to call Bridger and tell him I'm selling out. I stand up from my chair, because this is the point I expect Callie to be running out of my office, straight out to her truck to hightail it away from the filthy, pervy Wolf Jennings. Callie's gaze drops back down to the plans, maybe for one last disgusted look. She takes a deep breath, looks back up, and pins me with clear eyes.
I want to join the club.
My jaw slackens, and my mouth drops open wide. I ignore the tingle in my groin over the thought of Callie in my club, and... Did she just fucking say she wants to join? Please tell me this is a goddamn joke, I grit out. Her eyebrows furrow inward, and she keeps her gaze on me with bold challenge.
I'm not joking. I want to be a member.
No fucking way, I snarl as I stalk over to the wall and grab my hat off the peg. I need to get the fuck away from this brand of insanity.
At least take me there, she says firmly to my back, so I can see.
I ignore her, open my office door.
Take me, she says ominously, or I'll find someone who will.
I snort and step out of my office. Good fucking luck with that. Bridger and I are the only two she knows associated with the club, and he sure as shit wouldn't take her.
Colton Stokes,
Callie calls out. I stop dead in my tracks. My blood turns to ice in my veins, and I turn slowly to meet her stubborn gaze.
What did you just say? Colton Stokes.
She punctuates both words with relish and even gives me a sly grin.
How the fuck did she? Colton Stokes is a member, is he not?
She asks sweetly as she walks out from behind my desk toward me. I don't affirm her suspicion, because that's all it is, right? Just a suspicion she has. I stare at her hard, hoping to cow her with my death glare. I can feel an annoyed muscle ticking in my jaw from gritting my teeth so hard. Callie walks up to me, no more than a foot away, and gives me a knowing smile. She primly clasps her hands in front of her, and even sways back and forth like a mischievous schoolgirl.
I'm sure Colton would be more than happy to take me.
deep breath in. Calm the fuck down, Jennings.
What makes you think Colton is a member?
I ask neutrally as I lean my shoulder against the door jamb and tap my hat against my leg. I hope my casual nonchalance doesn't look too fake.
Callie arches an eyebrow at me and then snorts. She walks right past me out of my office, her shoulder brushing up against me.
I turn to watch her strut up to her desk, where she sits in her chair and picks up her cell phone from the desk. She looks up at me and says,
"It wasn't that hard to figure out. You and Colton wear matching belt buckles. Well, not matching exactly. Different style, but the engraving's the same. A circle with an inner circle. 8 lines creating 7 spaces around the ring. It's the same brand that's on your drawing in there of the silo. So, what is that? A secret code to get in or something?"
I squeeze my eyes shut hard, curse internally for a good 10 seconds, and then open them back up. She smiles at me in victory. I attempt to knock it right off her face.
"Exactly. And you don't have one, so you can't get in."
"Bet Colton can take me in," she says in a sing-song voice.
"For fuck's sake, Callie," I yell at her in frustration. "Why would you ever want to go in a place like that?" She studies me a moment, almost as if she expects me to come to the answer on my own. But I'm fucking clueless. I have no idea what could possess her to want this.
"Come on, Wolf," she says with a tinkling laugh. "I'm pretty transparent. I want to be different. I want to do something exciting and adventurous. I don't want to be dull Callie who does what everyone expects anymore. I want to do what I want to do. And besides, it's good enough for you, but not for me."
Christ. She had to lay that at my doorstep. The same exact little poor me speech that worked very well on me Saturday night, inducing me to kiss her hard and then stick my hand in her panties. I walk up to the edge of her desk and look down at her. In a voice as close to begging as I will ever come for any person, I say, "Callie, please, you don't belong in a place like that. Trust me on this." She eyes me almost sympathetically.
"You see, Wolf, I think I belong exactly in a place like that."
Then it's on. We engage in a staring war, her fern green eyes sparkling with excitement and sass, mine leveled in a bitter scowl. My will against hers. My ego against hers.
"I can call Colton."
She prods me to action, poising her finger over the screen of her phone. "Fuck," I mutter and slam my hat back on my head. "I'll take you, but that's it. It's just so you can see. Quick in and out."
"We should stay for at least one drink," she says with a happy grin.
"One drink," I concede, my brain already spinning fast, trying to figure out all the ways it could go wrong by me bringing the governor's daughter to a sex club.
"Tonight?"
she asks with excitement. I shake my head and pin her with serious eyes. "I can't tonight or tomorrow night, but I'll take you Wednesday." She looks like she wants to argue for a moment, but I'm not budging on this. Nope. I need some little victory over her in this battle that she just completely decimated me in. Wednesday happens to be the slowest night at the silo, and more importantly, I know Colton Stokes will be out of town starting Wednesday. When we made plans to meet so I could look at his stock, we had to choose the weekend, since he was going to be gone to a breeders' conference in Vegas. It's going to be hard enough to pull this off, and I sure as shit don't need Colton to see Callie at the silo. I don't want that fucker thinking he can have her in any way, and the dude is into her. I know that's exactly what he'll think. And while I'm pretty confident this is just curiosity on Callie's part, I don't want to take any chances that she would ever want to avail herself of the silo's decadence. I know I sure as hell won't indulge her in that way, but I'm not so sure Colton wouldn't oblige her. And then I'd probably have to kill the man.
Chapter 8. Callie. I push my way through the crowd at the Wicked Horse, my nerves jangling, and my heart about to slam its way out of my chest. The two shots of vodka I took while I sat in the parking lot haven't helped yet, and for the millionth time, I question the sanity of what I'm about to do. Wolf had told me to meet him in his club office tonight at 11 p.m., and he'd take me over. He reiterated that we'd stay for one drink and then we were leaving. I didn't argue with him about that, mainly because he's been in a terrible mood the last 2 days. He's stayed away from the office for the most part, but the few times I've seen him, he's snapped and barked at me with no provocation. He's furious that I've forced him to do this, but I don't care. The new Callie is on a mission to figure herself out. So no matter how many times I question my sanity right now, I'm going to keep trying things and testing my boundaries so I can see just what I have inside of me. I'm not willing to let anyone mold me again, but I have to know exactly what I'm made of so I can mold myself. It doesn't take Wolf but a moment to open his office door, and bless the great DNA of his parents, he is magnificent. He wears that black hair a bit long, curling over the edges of his ears and down to his collar. He has on his traditional jeans and boots, but he's looking beyond amazing in the black long-sleeved t-shirt that fits his powerful chest and arms like a glove. I'm surprised when he beckons me in. I got a brief glimpse of this place the night Wolf hauled me off the bar onto his shoulder. He brought me here first, and no sooner had he opened the door and taken one step in, he was backing right back out again. No clue what made him do that. And all I got was a brief upside-down glimpse of an office that was shockingly bare. Same wooden floor as out in the main nightclub, a large desk built for two people to work opposite each other, a leather couch, and a small electric refrigerator in one corner. Very Spartan, speaking of a place that is meant to do some hard work with no distractions. If I had to guess, I'd say this were more Bridger's office than Wolf's.
I need you to read and sign this,
Wolf says in a tight voice as he hands me a document. Glancing down at it, I see the words non-disclosure agreement on the top. I look back up and question. His lips are in a flat line, which means he's clearly still displeased to have me here. He nods down at the document.
Everyone that enters the silo has to sign it.
I assume it prohibits discussing the club with non-members?
In a nutshell,
he says tightly. I shrug my shoulders and walk over to his desk, grabbing a pen out of a mug that says, "Save a horse, ride a cowboy." Placing the document down, I lean over it to sign it when Wolf grabs my wrist. The contact of his palm to my skin is almost electric, and it makes me realize I've actually been sexually wound up. My blood immediately quickens, and I feel unsettled and needy. I realize it's not nerves I'm dealing with at all. It's a sexual itch I think needs scratched, and the prospect of all the naughty things I'm about to see is turning me on. One little touch from Wolf, and I want to lie down on the floor and spread my legs for him. Shaking my head to clear it, I look at Wolf.
You're just going to sign it without reading it?
He asks in disbelief. Well, yeah. I mean, who in the hell would I ever talk to this about? My dad? My non-existent best friend because Will didn't want me to have any friends? Or maybe Will?
There's a damages clause in there. If you talk, you agree that the damages are minimally set at $1 million.
Fine by me, I say coolly as I pull my hand away from his grasp. I hastily sign my name at the bottom and date it, even though I don't have $1 million. But I'm not worried, because I don't have one single person I could talk to this about. Placing the pen back in the cup, I hand the agreement to Wolf. He stares at me a moment, still wearing his put-upon scowl before taking the document. He folds it in half, seems to consider what to do with it, and then tosses it back down on the desk again with a sigh of resignation. For a brief moment, I consider alleviating the stress on him by telling him I won't make him take me, but that trickles away just as the thought of what I might see starts building up excitement within me. "Are you ready?" I ask, almost bouncing on the balls of my feet. I actually may have overdressed a little, but I didn't know what to expect. Wolf had told me that membership costs $50,000 per year, so I know the silo will probably be filled with elegantly dressed people. Or maybe naked people. I have no clue. Wolf is dressed super casual, but it doesn't make me self-conscious of the blue dress I bought yesterday that has one shoulder and arm bare, while the other is covered in a long, tight sleeve. It's form-fitting through my bust, waist, and hips, but comes down to my knee with a sexy slit up the back. The material is slightly stretchy with a silvery shimmer, so I paired it with a pair of silver high-heeled sandals I also bought.
"Look, Callie, are you prepared for this?"
Wolf asks with worry in his eyes. I tilt my head and give him a censuring look. "Wolf, I saw my fiancé with a ball gag in his mouth, getting whipped by a woman in vinyl. I didn't freak out then, so I think I'm good." He just stares at me a moment before giving a resigned nod.
"All right then, let's go."
Wolf takes my hand, which I enjoy very much. He leads me out the back door of the Wicked Horse. There is a path made of slate stone lined with subtle security lights that leads to the silo, which sits just about 20 yards away. There's a lone white door at the base of the massive concrete structure. We step through it into a short hall that branches left and right, which I assume leads behind the outer ring rooms, and another corridor that leads us out to the center of the building. As we walk out into the middle of the silo, I'm immediately assaulted with information. I'm overwhelmed, trying to process everything. I hear music, but not so loud as I can't hear the murmurs of people talking. Sexy, slow-beat music. I don't recognize it, but I like it. A large, circular bar made of polished chrome, glass, and black lacquer takes up the exact center of the room. A beautiful blonde bartender wearing a low-cut black dress that's sexy and elegant serves drinks to the members. Several women dressed just like her walk around with trays of finger food, handing them out to hungry patrons. The room could hold 100 people easily, but I estimate there's only about 30 or so. Some are dressed up like me, others wearing jeans like Wolf, which tells me there is no formal dress code. The patrons are all varied in age, and most people are paired off into couples. This surprises me, as I sort of expected a bunch of single people coming together for a horny good time. As if reading my mind, Wolf leans down and murmurs,
"Most patrons are in monogamous relationships. Probably 30% are married."
I quickly take stock of the rest of the decor. Black marbled flooring and low-hanging chandeliers that are dimmed to provide subtle lighting. Other than the bar and the stools surrounding it, there is no other furniture in the massive room. And then I focus in on what I truly came to see. The outer ring rooms that provide me with a powerful punch as I take in the floor-to-ceiling glass walls, providing unfettered viewing inside. I expect that's why there's no furniture, so as to encourage the patrons to move around, look inside the various rooms, almost as if they were at an art gallery. And the first room I look into is almost like living art, and my breath catches in my lungs. The room is completely bare except for what looks like a king-size mattress on a raised dais of black lacquer about a foot off the floor. The mattress is covered in black silk, which seems to melt right into a black platform, which seems to melt right into the shiny black marble floor. A naked couple lies on the mattress, their arms and legs intertwined as they kiss. My breath comes out in a wavering gust as I watch the man slide his hand up the woman's leg, over her hip bone, and reach in between their bodies. Because they are so tightly melded, I can't actually see what he's doing to her, but her back arches up off the bed and her eyes squeeze shut as her lips part to let go of what I'm guessing is a moan. A surge of... is that lust? Courses through me. I have the urge to press my legs together and I can feel my nipples start to pucker. Holy shit! I've hardly seen anything and yet I'm immediately turned on. Wolf places his hand against my lower back and tries to direct me toward the bar, but I can't disconnect my gaze from the couple on the black silk mattress. It's not what I expected because I really can't see much. It makes me crazy to see more. I walk almost trance-like toward the glass wall, intent on trying to get a gander at something more. I feel itchy and needy, my curiosity now completely having shut down any common-sense arguments my brain may still have tried to make to remind me I shouldn't be here. I step up to the glass, and in the reflection, I can see Wolf step up behind me. The couple seems completely oblivious as they continue to kiss and fondle each other. I get a flash of his erection and a peek at her boob, but right now, they're still wrapped tight. "Can they see us?" I whisper.
"They can,"
Wolf says in an almost strained voice. "It's so beautiful," I say reverently, and then I let out a small gasp as the man pushes himself up, revealing himself to me. He's beautifully lean and tan, and his erection sticks up from his pelvis, wetness shining at the tip. I stare at it in fascination, the second penis I've seen in my lifetime, having, of course, only been privy to Will's before. The woman spreads her legs and raises her knees. I've seen my vagina plenty of times, but hers is completely bald, and that fascinates me to no end. I've thought about doing that before, but then figured, why go through the pain for Will to just pound away for a few moments before rolling off and going to sleep? The man wraps his hand around the base of his shaft, and with one arm supporting his weight, he feeds it into her. I hold my breath as I watch it disappear, trying to ignore the twinges I'm feeling between my own legs. I seem to have a hard time with my breathing, actually forgetting